Hello all, you're tuning in to the 68th episode of the Audible Weed Walk. This is Nina welcoming you. Yes, this podcast is rather odd. First, it is coming at a different time than usual, and it's coming with a few announcements. One of it is about some awesome foodie films you can catch up on for free. I will come to that. With the weather blues, we had some major problem with the logistics since we got flooded in during the recent deluge. This was due to some thoughtless development around us. It is something beyond us to deal with. We are still waiting for the emergency help we were told we are entitled to. Until then, it's all about mess, muck, and lingering flood water around us with all the wonderful sewer water soaking in. Bonus, I guess. In short, there is plenty happening around that is rather depressing. So, what does a foodie do in such a situation? Seek out comfort food, of course. But given the weather, cannot even go for wild weedy greens. So what then? Out come my stack of Tulai Panji rice. What is that? Well, it is a non-basmati aromatic single origin rice. I am mentioning this seemingly jargon because now as a discerning shopper, you will encounter this term quite often. Non-basmati rice, it's okay. But what is single origin? Well, there are two parallel theories about how rice got domesticated from some 9,000 years back. A single origin model suggests that two main subspecies of Asian rice, Indica and Japonica, were domesticated from the wild rice, Oryza rufipogon. The other model believes that the rice was independently domesticated in different parts of Asia. The second model is actually gaining ground. But when you are purchasing and you encounter the term single origin, it is not about all that. It simply means that it comes from, the product comes from a single producer, crop or region in a country. Many varieties evolve and get adapted to the various soil, climatic and other ecological conditions. For example, there are rice that address joint problems and arthritis like Ilupai Poo Samba. Ilupai Poo refers to the fragrant mahua flower. So just by the name, you know the rice is fragrant, reminiscent of mahua flower. Similarly, this particular rice comes from Tamil Nadu. Similarly, there are rice like Ambe Mohar, which comes from Maharashtra. The rice smells of mango blossoms. And they may actually address different things. For example, some rice may be very good for sugar balancing, good for weight loss, etc. Then, of course, if you're a rice aficionado, you will be discerning about whether the rice is parboiled or raw. If it is raw, how old it is. You will pay attention if it is a polished, semi-polished or unpolished. Unpolished grains can look rough and tough, but retain the thin layer that comes between the husk and the starchy part of the grain, which is the most nutritious. So next time you are going in for the dazzling white rice, do so as an indulgence from time to time. But develop a taste, if you are not already in love with, the unpolished rice. How rice is processed is another thing to consider. Is it dehusked manually or by machine? Of course, if manually it is processed, the grain retains the nutritious layer a lot more. Remember, many grains we do not find in the market easily, not because they are not tasty or bad, but because the standard large machines are unable to process them. Actually, we often talk about scaling up technologies for implementation. But scaling up, I feel, should be in terms of spread. For greater impact, especially in developing countries like ours, the focus should be scaling down some of the techniques and technologies and machineries. Imagine if we encouraged small machines, maybe even portable ones, to process millets, like job steers, Coax larca majobi, which grows easily across India, very nutritious and tasty, but it is processed and dehusked and therefore available as food primarily in the Northeast India. So, to get back to our topic, many of these grains, in this case paddy varieties, grow in small geographical areas and are naturalized there. They are handed over within the family as heirloom seeds, even when the market stopped encouraging them. As a graduate student in the USA, sometimes people commented how unusual that I have several kinds of rice in my pantry. They were actually the usual ones, you know, a regular rice, a basmati rice, probably a stash of Gobindabhog rice I carried from home, rice for risotto or sticky rice for sushi. I must say I was quietly proud of my stash. But in India, oh my god, the choices are so many. And it's not just restricted to paddy alone. There can be so many different kind of millet-based rice. Did you know that there is a wheat variety called emmer wheat that was traditionally grown in Karnataka, Maharashtra and parts of Tamil Nadu? It is still grown in some parts of Karnataka, it seems. The wheat looks like paddy, sort of. Then there is a rice variety in Punjab, which I have not tasted yet. It looks like wheat. Interesting, isn't it? How can I mention rice and not mention the phenomenal work and contribution by Dr. Debaldev and his colleagues? Many such varieties are lost, but we have many because of their effort by which they recognized, documented their genetic uniqueness and actually grown them to keep them alive. Rice like Tulai Panji that I started telling you about comes from a small area in Raiganj in the area of North Dinajpur. Actually, this rice is also grown in few parts of South Dinajpur as well, both in West Bengal within a very narrow geographical area. You know that part of India, if you are drawing a map of India, it is part of the West Bengal which kind of got squished into a narrow strip between Bangladesh and Bihar, right around there. This rice is grown over centuries. In the recent years, it got a GI tag. GI refers to geographic indication tag. Many things that are farmed, art, craft, and defined culture, they are now getting GI tags to kind of recognize their uniqueness, geographic uniqueness. Tulai Panji is GI tagged. It was first documented perhaps in the Gazette record of 1876. This rice is naturally white and fluffy. Perhaps that's why it reminded people of Tula or cotton wool. And that's why the name comes from. The name could also come from Tulai River, which runs in the area. It literally doubles in volume when cooked. As a Bengali, my comfort food is mostly bhate bhat or fena bhat. The latter translates to frothy rice with vegetable, where the rice is mushy and sticky. But bhate bhat refers to rice with few or several vegetables boiled together that may be mushy or not. Sometimes the veggies are boiled separately also. So this time my comfort food was Tulai Panji with totally local plantain and potato boiled with a dollop of Kalimpong ghee, which I have a tiny jar and it comes out only rarely, and a couple of simply awesome dalle kursani in brine. The dalle is a kind of round, red and amazingly tasty chili from Sikkim. Is something that is not part of my regular pantry, but a speciality product. What can I compare it with? Let me think. Maybe it's like stashing a little bit of truffle oil and only using it once in a while. Like that. The meal was perfect. I cannot tell how awesome this simple meal was. Made me want to share it with you. But there is a caveat. I try my best to stay away from isms, including food isms. I believe in lukavari and believe that all our consumptions, food or otherwise, we should think through and support those that conserves and promotes natural biodiversity of a place as much as possible. From that point, my comfort food satisfied the latter. But am I slipping into a bit of localism? Because I had a little pang of guilt that the food did not come from, they were not local, even though they were not part of my regular grocery. Hold that thought. In a few weeks, I will, in the podcast, we will cover and discuss this in details. So this is another announcement. The podcast will stall for a while. I will see if I can repost some of the older ones with a lot of information that can be revisited in this gap period. Actually, my mother is not doing very well, and I would like to take a break and will be with her for a few weeks. That is another reason I definitely wanted to reach out to you this week. There is a film festival based in Pune each year. It's called the Kirloskar Vasundhara International Film Festival. It's an environmental film festival that happens around the Earth Day in April. But this year, they could not hold it during that time due to COVID restriction. They have now come up in their new online avatar, which will be starting on December 14th. December 14th to 17th is this screening. They will showcase thought-provoking films about flourishing nature, nutritious food, and healthy society. Given their focus, I think it would be interesting for many of you. You can access and watch the films for free if you register, which is also for free. You can find the registration link in the summary of this podcast. I will post it in my social media, and also, of course, you can Google. The organizers have contacted me. They had contacted me some time back to create a film on the weed walk, which they had sponsored. This film was filmed by my fellow community member, Alessandra Silva, who is an awesome filmmaker. A big shout out to her. This film will be screened on December 15th. But you can catch so many others films on food, permaculture, and nutrition. If you get to watch some of these films, send me your list of favorites. If you happen to watch my film, then please, I will look forward to your comments. Take care, stay well, and stay safe. I will see you in a few weeks. Until then, take the opportunity to catch up on the previous Audible Weed Walk podcast and videos in the YouTube channel Edible Weed Walk and sign up in the Google form. Bye.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.